Live from New York City, it's The Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to explore a Columbia University study about vitamin B complex and how it helps you if you are around polluted air, and how that polluted air can cause cardiovascular disease. Also, proof that magnesium, a very important macro mineral, can help prevent fractures, from the University of Bristol, which is in the United Kingdom, and how mindfulness, just as effective as CBT for a broad range of psychiatric symptoms, Lund University, which is in Sweden, and water, plain old water, outperforms sports drinks for young athletes, Penn State University, and a lot more on health and healing. I'm not having a guest today so that we can have more time for our talkback segment, where you have an opportunity to call in on different topics and share your points of view and your insights. Today, from our audio file, we're going to hear from a former Prime Minister of Australia of what he thinks about Donald Trump. And also an ex-Marine talks about who really runs the world. It's a short clip, 2 minutes long, but very insightful because he was in the battlefields. And also, we have to look at those people who came together and collectively decided that Donald Trump and his agenda was the agenda that we needed. Now, some simply voted for Trump, understandably, because everyone else they had voted for in the past, including the Clintons for 8 years, Obama for 8 years, or George Bush for 8 years, never honored their word to them. And so they felt, well, maybe he will. They didn't have to like him or his personality, but if he could bring them jobs, that's what they really cared about. And they should not be denigrated, because unless you're unemployed, unless you're underemployed, unless you're faced with going to jail because you're delinquent on a payday loan, you can never understand what it's like to be that the other. And so I believe that we should take a moment in life before we judge others as somehow being wrong because they're not on our side, and have some compassion and empathy for the predicament they're in. I'm going to replay in the next week or two Poverty Inc. I'm going to do a webinar with that and then address where the world is going, because somehow we've forgotten the lessons of 2000 and 2008. We better learn them. Many of us, myself included, believe that we're living in massive bubble land. Bubbles in the equity market, in the subprime market, in credit card, student loan, and car payment markets. In effect, we're completely, totally bankrupt. States can't balance their budgets. Cities can't balance their budgets. People can't balance their checkbook. Everyone's got credit card debt. If everyone represents about 75% of the American public, so every one of the 75% are in debt or struggling. The others, they're doing just fine. You know, 60 million Americans don't have to worry. But we're the ones who someone should pay attention to, so I'm going to. And I was just deciding that last night. We're also going to hear a piece from Tucker Carlson. And what's amazing about Tucker, because I give him credit for bringing on people and trying to hold civil debates and discussion. He doesn't blink or back off, and he's not obnoxious. He has a very, you know, pleasant kind of demeanor. But I was looking at his face when he had on the Hawaiian legislator who did not jump on the, yeah, let's go ban Syria bandwagon. And you can tell a lot by a person's body language. And it's his facial expressions, like, do you really believe this? And yeah, she really believes it. She's on the right side of history here. I'm thinking about putting up a film I just saw early this morning, a 27-minute film I'll do it next week, where President Assad is offering a challenge. He's got information. Others on the ground in the intelligence community have the information. We presented this information with Ray McGovern, one of the world's most respected former intelligence analysts for the CIA. And McGovern spoke with a group of intelligence agents from all around the world and people on the ground, and they all say the same thing. Assad didn't intentionally bomb anyone, and certainly there was no sarin gas. And he gave us what the probable situation was with an ammunition depot that the terrorists, Al-Qaeda, had chemicals to make bombs, and it exploded. But to blame Assad for intentionally doing that was wrong, and there was no forensic evidence to prove it. Everyone in the military chain of command, including the CIA, acted before they had the evidence. That should tell you a lot. Also, we're going to hear from a man who says, quote, the most ill-informed, underprepared, ethically challenged, and psychologically ill-equipped president in U.S. history. Wow. That's Garth Evans, former prime minister. So we're going to hear from Tucker Carlson and the person who very well could be a whole new political voice, because she's smart on the issues, well-educated, form, and she's not a reactionary. She uses reason. So we're going to play all those clips. But we always start with health and healing. B vitamins can mitigate the impact of fine particle pollution, cardiovascular disease. That's according to new research conducted at Columbia University's Mailman School for Public Health. Healthy non-smokers who took B vitamin supplements nearly reversed any negative effects of their cardiovascular and immune systems and weakened the effects of air pollution on the heart rate by 150% and total white blood count by 139% and lymphocyte count by 106%. Now, this is the first clinical trial to evaluate whether B vitamin supplements change the biologic and physiologic responses to ambient air pollution exposure. And this was published in Scientific Reports. So what does this mean in just common language? I live much of the year in New York City. I also have a home. It's a ranch, and it's completely different. On the ranch, there is no air pollution, no water pollution. I'm 100% off the grid. I have my own solar. I have wells. I filter water. There's no pesticide. I have beehives. There's no bee colony collapse. Everything thrives. I walk out in the morning after I do a workout, and I take a basket, and I will go around to the different fruit trees and harvest, in some cases, as many as 30 different types of fruit. And that's what I have for my breakfast. And then I sit in a hibiscus garden surrounded by bushes of lavender, lilac, honeysuckle, jasmine, and chrysanthemums. So it's a real potpourri of smells, aromatherapy. And with my bird on my shoulder, she's a yellow and blue macaw, and she just sits there and looks and grooms. She's very happy. I write. I write in longhand. And I write commentaries because I believe that what's missing, one of the things that's missing from radio and television and the internet today, are in-depth commentaries that take us to a deeper place of analysis and then give people a point and step back. Don't be a pushy advocate. Just share your ideas. And like the Buddha, detach from the outcome. You hope that people find something of reason in what you say or you write. And if it does and stimulates additional thought and action in them, all the better. And if it doesn't, it's okay. Now ask yourself this. How many times have you heard original commentaries from radio hosts or television hosts? Very rare. So I believe it's something we should do. It also helps us keep sharp and keep probing. And one thing I can count on, the air is not going to have particulate matter. Now, when I'm back in New York and I go out for runs in the morning and I come back, I can feel the air pollution. You may not always see it, but it's there. That air pollution goes into our body and immediately our lymphatic system and our white blood cells begin to react to trap these airborne particulates and take them out of the body through the liver, through the kidneys, through the urine, through the sweat. So when you live in New York and you work in New York City and you travel on subways and buses and cabs and Ubers and the other car services, you're inhaling a lot of pollution. So simply taking a 25 milligram B complex each day can make an enormous difference in protecting your lungs and your body. Now, my suggestion is that if you live anywhere in America or around the world, because we have an audience almost in every country, find the green space near you. For an hour, if you can, just sit and enjoy it. You can read, you can listen to music, you can listen to nature. Breathe in that clean air, because the more trees and shrubs and flowers you're around, and that also means bring them into your house or workspace, the cleaner the air, because trees bring in carbon dioxide and pollutants and give out oxygen. It's a great exchange. From the University of Bristol, there is a study that shows that magnesium could prevent fractures. Now, magnesium could hold the key to preventing one of the most preventable causes of disability in middle-aged and even elderly. And bone fractures are one of the leading causes of death. The older you are when you get a bone fracture, frequently the inflammation around the bone fracture causes inflammation that goes into the bloodstream. People die. It also is very debilitating. So it really is a major increase on the burden of our healthcare system. And it's well known that calcium and vitamin D play an important role in bone health. Well, magnesium is an essential nutrient. It's also an important component of the bone. And though there have been suggestions that magnesium is not beneficial, it's not true. I've looked at all the different studies. There's just one study. University of Bristol and Eastern Finland followed 2,245 middle-aged men over a 20-year period. They found that men with lower levels of magnesium had an increased risk of fractures, particularly fractures of the hip. And the risk of having a fracture was reduced by 44% if you simply took your magnesium. So take your magnesium and calcium and vitamin D3 and prevent fractures. You've heard me talk about mindfulness. Well, according to Lund, L-U-N-D, University, which is in Sweden, mindfulness group therapy has an equally positive effect as individual CBT, that's cognitive behavioral therapy, for the treatment of a wide range of psychiatric symptoms in patients with depression and anxiety and stress-related disorders. Researchers made the finding in a new study from the Center for Primary Healthcare Research in Malmo, which is a collaborative between Lund University in Sweden and a regional college. Let me put this in simpler language. The need for psychotherapy, talk therapy, in primary health care is one of the most important things we could do for people who've had diagnoses that are psychiatric, but maybe just in the vast majority of cases, just life issues. The things we all go through, the travails of our loss of a pet, a parent, a friend, looking in the mirror one day and realizing, gee whiz, we are getting older, realizing one day that we mourn the opportunities that we had and we sabotaged, the opportunities to be healthier and we became sicker, happier and we became sadder, more prosperous in our joy of life, and we relegated ourselves to men and women caves and felt sorry for ourselves or went into unnecessary mood distractions. It's not a drug that brings you out of that or helps you. It's not a brain chemical imbalance. It's having a support system of family or friends who understand you and can be there as the counterbalancing voice, and that voice of positive affirmation of your life, that you're okay. You need a lot more humanistic, spiritually motivated people within the mental health field. Here's what it says. Our new research shows that mindfulness group therapy had the equivalent effect of individual CBT for a wide range of psychiatric symptoms that are common among this patient group. And this was published in European Psychiatry. So, having people who are anxious, stress-induced, or depressed individuals, and you have people that you can be mindful with, you can meditate with, you can relax, you can breathe, and listen to soft meditative music that helps you calm, bring down your cortisol level. Something we never talk about in our society is cortisol and how it causes heart attacks, strokes, and ages the brain. That's your stress hormone. And instead of dealing with it, we'll take a tranquilizer or marijuana. We'll drink or we'll take an antidepressant medication or antipsychotic medication. Or we'll go shopping or we'll go gambling or porn, all kinds of things people do to distract themselves from what they should be facing. So we know that mindful meditation allows us to deal with the symptoms of depression, anxiety, stress, somatization, obsessive-compulsive disorder, interpersonal sensitivity, aggression, phobic anxiety, paranoid ideation. All these things are dealt with. So you're not crazy, and you don't have a psychiatric diagnosis. You just need some help getting through life issues. And finally, a new study from Penn State University shows the power of water. Now, most younger athletes don't exert themselves at an intensity or duration that requires the extra sugar and salt contained in sports drinks. Quote, sports drinks can replenish some of what you lost during exercise, but you really need to be exercising for more than 45 minutes to an hour before you consider that. Instead, water for under an hour duration exercising. So why put all that sugar and caffeine into your body when it just needs water? And that's what this showed. So don't go to the other junk that you want in your body. Take just nice spring water. That would be the trick. Now, if you really want to punch up some electrolytes, fine. Then get just a little jar in any health food store of powdered electrolytes and just put a small amount, shake it in. Now you got your electrolytes, no sugar, no caffeine, and nice spring water. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. We have a lot more to go. Please stay with us. I want to share some insights about war. I'm concerned that this false flag, this wag the dog that's going on now, that the independents and the progressives can understand, but the corporate liberal democratic and conservative Republican establishment who are absolutely cheerleading for militarization of all of our diplomatic missions around the world, they want war. Why? There's someone behind them. There's a lot behind them. And according to John Whitehead, who now has his own program on the Progressive Radio Network, the government is $20 trillion in debt. Why is that important? Well, war spending has ratcheted up the nation's debt. The debt has now exceeded a staggering $20 billion, and that's just the federal debt, and it's growing at an alarming rate. How alarming? $35 million an hour. $2 billion every 24 hours. And yet, while defense contractors are getting richer, and how many of them are? You've heard me say many times in this program, around 400,000 people, individuals or corporations, people working for corporations, the total military-industrial complex, they feed off war. They need us to believe that every action represents a threat against all Americans, our infrastructure, our quality of life. It does not, but you know, that's what they have us believe, and they control the media. So while defense contractors are making most of that money, we're in hock to foreign nations such as Japan and China, our two largest foreign holders at $1.1 trillion that we still owe Japan and $1.1 trillion to China. They'll never see that money. The Pentagon's annual budget consumes almost 100% of individual income tax revenues. If there's any absolute maxim by which the federal government seems to operate, it is that the American taxpayer always gets ripped off, especially when it comes to paying the tab for America's attempts to police the globe. Now, having been co-opted by greedy defense contractors and corrupt politicians and incompetent government officials, America's expanding military empire is bleeding the country dry at a rate of more than $57 million per hour. The government has spent $4.8 trillion on wars abroad since 9/11, with $7.9 trillion when you add in the interest, almost $8 trillion. That's a tax burden of more than $16,000 per American. Almost a quarter of that debt was incurred as a result of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and Pakistan and Syria. For the past 16 years, these wars have been paid for almost entirely by borrowing money from foreign nations and the U.S. Treasury. We're fighting terrorism with a credit card. And according to the Watson Institute for Public Affairs at Brown University, interest payments on what we've already borrowed for these failed wars will cost over $8 trillion. I'm only talking about interest, $8 trillion. The government loss more than $160 billion in waste and fraud by the military and defense contractors. Did anyone go to jail? No. Was anyone fined heavily? No. Did anyone have to give back the money? No. $160 billion, that's what we know about. With paid contractors often undernumbering enlisted combat troops, or I should say outnumbering them. So you see, here's the game they play. They say, well, we've removed all combat forces out of Iraq. Well, then they hired 10,000 more who are making $1,200 a day to go in and take their place. It's still someone in arms, in being paid. We pay it, and we don't need them. Yet we're not told about them. The American war effort, dubbed as the Coalition of the Willing, has quickly evolved into the Coalition of the Billing, with American taxpayers forced to cop up billions of dollars for cash bribes, luxury bases, a highway to nowhere, faulty equipment, salaries for so-called ghost soldiers, and overpricing of everything associated with the war effort, including, we found out, $640 for a single toilet seat and $7,600 for one single little old coffee pot. You heard me right. $7,600. Taxpayers being forced to pay $1.4 million per hour to provide U.S. weapons to countries that can't afford them. As Mother Jones reports, the Pentagon's Foreign Military Finance Program, quote, opens the way for the U.S. government to pay for weapons for other countries, only to promote world peace, of course, using your tax dollars, which are then recycled into the hands of military-industrial complex corporations. The U.S. government spends more on wars and military occupations abroad every year than all 50 states combined spend on health, education, welfare, and safety. In fact, the U.S. spends more on its military than the 8 highest-ranking nations with the biggest defense budgets combined. The reach of America's military empire includes close to 800 military bases in 160 countries, and they operate with more than $156 billion annually that we know about. Quote from investigative journalist David Vine, even U.S. military resorts and recreation areas in places like the Bavarian Alps and Seoul, Korea, are bases of a kind. Worldwide, the military runs more than 170 golf courses. Now President Trump wants to increase military spending by $54 billion, promising, quote, a historic increase in defense spending to rebuild the depleted military of the United States. That is such a joke. So, on a planet where Americans account for, according to the Nation magazine, 4.3% of the population, the U.S. military spending accounts for 37% of the total, global total. Add to the cost of waging war in Syria, with or without congressional approval, and the burden on taxpayers soar to $11 million a day. Ironically, while presidential candidate Trump was vehemently opposing the U.S. use of force in Syria, as well as harboring Syrian refugees within the United States, he had no problem retaliating against Syrian President Assad on behalf of Syrian children, so he claims, killed in a chemical attack. The cost of launching 59 Tomahawk missile strikes against Syria? Well, about $100 million. Yet what most Americans brainwashed into believing that patriotism means supporting the war machine fail to recognize is that these ongoing wars have little to do with keeping the country safe and everything to do with enriching the military-industrial complex at taxpayers' expense. The rationale may keep changing for why American military forces are in Afghanistan, Iraq, or Pakistan, and now Syria. However, the one that remains constant is that those who run the government, including the current president, are feeding the appetite of the military-industrial complex and fattening the bank accounts of its investors. So, I now want to play you an audio clip from a person that ran a government. And he has something to say. His name is Gareth Evans, and he has something to say about, quote, the most ill-informed, underprepared, ethically challenged, and psychologically ill-equipped president in the United States history. Let's hear it.
And of course, the Australia-United States alliance has become much more immediately salient since the election of Donald Trump. Manifestly, the most ill-informed, underprepared, ethically challenged, and psychologically ill-equipped president in United States history. Personally driven by instinct and impulse, unhampered by knowledge or judgment, he has led an administration acting so far manifestly on the basis of postures, not of policies. I have to say that anyone betting on this administration delivering consistent, coherent, constructive, and decent outcomes over the next 4 years is making a very big gamble indeed. My own answer then to the dilemma of how Australia should respond to all of this, to express it in bumper sticker terms, is less United States, more Asia, more self-reliance.
Okay. Now, why don't we bring on the mainstream media, those men and women who have served in the armed forces, who have seen the real cost of conflict upon themselves, their fellow soldiers, but also upon the innocence that is taken away from children and families who are victimized either directly by being killed or injured, or becoming refugees in their own home, their country. This is one such Marine. It's a short clip. Let's listen to it.
Anyone takes an honest look at 9/11 and specifically Building 7, they will realize they're being lied to. and the entire system is set up to continue lying to them. That tells you a lot about not only how much our government feels about us, but also about what our government's real agenda is and what they're really endorsing, which is a never-ending state of war. These people are psychopaths. They don't have compassion and empathy like a healthy human being does. They don't care about you or me. They don't care about the military. They call us heroes through their media and whatnot. They don't give a shit about us at all. And they certainly don't give a shit about the Iraqi people or the Iranian people or any people for that matter. So if you want to understand the way the world functions, you need to look at it from the perspective of a psychopath who is drunk on his own power. Now, if you can get into that place and start to look at the way the world functions, you're going to find that it all makes perfect sense. Keep in mind, these people also have spent their trillions and trillions of dollars and pounds on building things such as underground compounds, which I don't know if you've got an invitation, but I don't. And these people are so nuts that they are willing, in my opinion, to set off a third world war. Look at the policies with regards to antagonizing Russia. What the hell are we doing? We're picking a fight with a nation. Is Russia seriously a threat to Europe or the West? That's just ridiculous. Of course they're not. Why would you do such a thing? Would a sane, healthy human being carry out a policy like that? No. No. But if you're a psychopath who sees that the only way that you can maintain your position of power is to divide people, then you see war as a good thing. For you, war is great. So everything you can do to get people to fight a war against each other and keep fighting each other is good for you. Now, if you're sane, that doesn't make sense. So you need to get out of your sane perspective, get into the mind of a psychopath, drunk on his own power, and see the world that way, and all of these things will make perfect sense.
Well, your thoughts on that. What he's saying would mean that if we went back, Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush Sr. And Bill Clinton and Bush and Obama and Trump, they're all sociopaths. They're all drunk on their own power because they've all bombed countries. They've all engaged in regime change. They've all used our resources through the CIA and other intelligence agencies to train terrorists, to fund terrorists, and to go after unions and anyone organizing for the poor and working class to improve their conditions. They have destroyed these people. Not a single person has been held accountable. So what does that tell you? Now, here's one group that championed, some, not all, Donald Trump, and this is just a little different perspective on the Tea Party.
Tea Party Congressman Alan West of Florida. I must confess, when I see anyone with an Obama bumper sticker, I recognize them as a threat to the gene pool. They believe in loving America, but hating its government.
Conservative activist Grover Norquist.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
And they believe that anyone who disagrees with the Tea Party has sinister anti-American motives.
The objective of the liberals is to destroy this country. The objective of the liberals is to make America mediocre.
Most of all, you must never, under any circumstance, seek to reach a compromise with your opponent or do any of what Democrats and genuine Republicans both call governing. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell.
Our top political priority over the next 2 years should be to deny President Obama a second term.
And one other plank in the Tea Party platform. If you're poor, it means you're either too lazy or too stupid to be rich. Here's Andre Bauer, Tea Party leader and Lieutenant Governor of South Carolina. My grandmother was not a highly educated woman, but she told me as a small child to quit feeding stray animals. You know why? Because they breed. During Tea Party rallies and campaign speeches, we've been told that America was founded as a Christian nation, and that if the Founding Fathers were here today, they'd tell us so. Here's John Adams in the Treaty of Tripoli. As the government of the United States is not, in any sense, founded on the Christian religion. And here's Thomas Jefferson. That our civil rights have no dependence on our religious opinions. And here's the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. What's more frightening than the perversion of our great history is that sensible, smart, strong Republicans, the very men and women who should be standing up to radical fundamentalism, are so frightened of losing primary battles to religious zealots that they've thrown in the towel on sanity. So we get this.
Yes, that the Constitution established the United States of America as a Christian nation.
It's ironic because the biggest enemy of the phony Republican isn't Nancy Pelosi or Harry Reid or Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. It's this man. He said, heal the sick, feed the hungry, care for the weakest among us, and always pray in private. Ideological purity. Compromise is weakness. A fundamentalist belief in scriptural literalism. Denying science. Unmoved by facts. Undeterred by new information. A hostile fear of progress. A demonization of education. A need to control women's bodies. Severe xenophobia. Tribal mentality. Intolerance of dissent and a pathological hatred of the U.S. government. They can call themselves the Tea Party. They can call themselves conservatives. And they can even call themselves Republicans. Though Republicans certainly shouldn't. But we should call them what they are, the American Taliban. And the...
Your perspective. I'd like to hear what you had to think on these issues and where you think America is going. And why is the entirety of the American media, including, with the exception of the progressive websites, everyone else is falling in line and becoming a cheerleader, including a lot of well-known liberals. Such as the Amy Goodman, Democracy Now. Why aren't these things being challenged? What are your thoughts? Talk back, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And here is that short segment from Tucker Carlson where one responsible, informed legislator in Washington refused to jump on Bomb Syria, is guilty, even though we have no proof. The very same people who were absolutely certain about weapons of mass destruction and were wrong. These people should never be on the American media forum again. Their being wrong has caused millions of death and displacements and suffering. They've had to pay no price for being wrong. Listen to how Carlson handles this discussion.
Most of the Washington establishment has been gung-ho for all this, as we just said. One of the few lawmakers who isn't is Hawaii Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard, a Democrat, who criticized the escalation as reckless and warned it could cause a much broader war. She joins us tonight from Hawaii. Congresswoman, thanks for coming on. So,
aloha, Tucker.
You have heard media outlets that probably support you generally describe people who have qualms about what happened last night as bigots. Do you think that's a fair characterization?
We, as the American people, should be concerned when any president of the United States launches an illegal and unconstitutional military strike against a foreign government. This is something that Congress has not authorized, and it's an escalation of a counterproductive regime change war in Syria that our country's been waging for years. First, for many years, through the CIA covertly, and now overtly through President Trump's reckless military strike last night. As you know well, Tucker, this is a war that has cost hundreds of thousands of Syrian lives. It has caused millions of Syrian refugees to flee their home. And it has strengthened these terrorist groups operating on the ground in Syria, like al-Qaeda, al-Nusra, ISIS, and others, whose sole goal is to overthrow the Syrian government, to take over and take ownership
right
over Syria.
So this attack, last night's mission, was predicated on this sarin gas attack earlier in the week. And everyone we've talked to on this show, people with access in some cases to classified intelligence, has said unequivocally the Assad government did this, killed these children with poison gas. Do you believe that?
It doesn't matter what I believe or not. What matters is evidence and facts.
And do you think there is evidence
administration
for that?
If the Trump administration has the evidence unequivocally proving this, then share it with the American people. Share it with Congress. Come to Congress and make your case before launching an unauthorized, illegal military strike against a foreign government. You know, Iraq is not so far off in our memories, especially for people like me who not only served there, but who lost friends there. And we remember when the then Bush administration, including Colin Powell and others, came to Congress and came to the United Nations presenting so-called evidence of weapons of mass destruction that later proved to be false.
Right.
So the disaster that is Iraq war was predicated on so-called evidence. So I think it pays for the American people and members of Congress to be very careful, thoughtful, and skeptical, and to support, frankly, what the United Nations was working on yesterday before this military strike was launched, in immediately launching an independent, international, neutral investigation to gather that evidence, gather the facts, so that that can be presented.
Right. So I guess one of the differences between the early Iraq war and now is that there seems to be very little dissent on the left, or at least among mainstream liberals. They all seem for this. All the big media outlets, all the punditry on television suggests support for Donald Trump from the left. Have you noticed that? And what accounts for that, do you think?
I don't guess to know where people are coming from or why, but I really wish personally, as a veteran, that especially people in positions of power, whether they be in the media or in Congress, in Washington, to be very careful in understanding exactly what the cost of these wars are and what the consequences of a reckless action like the one President Trump took last night will result in. You know, we are seeing already how taking this action by weakening the Syrian government, the Syrian military, de facto you are strengthening and empowering these terrorist groups like al-Qaeda in their effort, again, to take over all of Syria. We are seeing an increase in the likelihood or the possibility that we, the United States, end up in a direct military conflict with Russia, who are very closely allied with Syria and who have their own military operating in the ground there. And when you consider the consequences of that, the United States and Russia being the two nuclear powers in the world, it should be a cause of great concern for everyone.
Yeah, you'd think, except they hacked our election, so we have to. Congresswoman, thank you for joining us. We're out of time. It's really nice to see you tonight. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Tucker.
Okay, that was Tucker, and a woman who I believe will play a very important role in the future if she stays true to independent thinking and doesn't become compromised by the corporate liberal democratic establishment. By the way, there was a story in by Chauncey DeVega in Raw Story about a psychologist, Philip Zimbardo. Many of you will understand why that name's important, because he was the one who did the Stanford prison experiment. And he says Donald Trump, quote, is an unstrained, unbridled present hedonist, end quote. If you don't remember him, in 1971, Philip conducted one of the most widely known social psychology experiments of all time. He was a professor at Stanford University. He recruited 18 college-age males to play the role of guards and inmates in a makeshift prison he would construct in the basement of the psychology department. And after just one day of the experiment, the students quickly internalized the roles of the powerful and the powerless. Guards became increasingly abusive and cruel towards the students who had been termed prisoners. The prisoners responded first by resisting and then by succumbing to despair and a sense of learned helplessness. And although the experiment was originally planned for 2 weeks, Zimbardo stopped his experiment after 6 days, and the lesson had been learned. When the correct group dynamics are present and a set of rules legitimate the behavior, otherwise normal or good individuals will abuse and bully other human beings. It's been almost 5 decades since Zimbardo conducted what is now known as the Stanford Prison Experiment, and there's been an increase in the coarseness and meanness of American popular culture. And what has been described as the culture of cruelty is the new normal, and surveillance is omnipresent. And police brutality is increasing, and the militarization of even our language is ever-present. And politicization and dysfunction have broken the standing norms and rules of good governance in Washington. We have only corrupt governance in Washington. And trust in political and social institutions, such as the news media, and rightly so, it's non-existent today by anyone who has a sense of depth. Authoritarianism has increased among conservatives and liberals. You don't get any more pro-war, inhumane, and emasculating, eviscerating than the Clintons and the entire liberal corporate Democratic establishment that has morphed into the so-called new Blue Dog Democrats. They do not speak for true liberals, and any true liberal should be offended, and that no one should be speaking for true conservatives. The Republicans certainly do, but they shouldn't. So let's just make sure that the social safety net that every society that is humane and spiritual should not be torn apart, and the nation's police continue to abuse and kill blacks and brown people, and Native Americans are not even getting a second thought. This is social dominance behavior filtered through racism and the neoliberal economic order. The total sum of these and other factors has resulted in the election of the primal neo-fascist Donald Trump. In many ways, Trump's election was a decision by millions of American voters to punish their fellow citizens. And these people were encouraged and enabled in this desire to do harm by their leaders. And it's being manifest now. I'm Gary Noll. I want to hear your thoughts. What has America become? What has our political system become? Why is it only 1 million Americans voted for Jill Stein when you have over 47% of all American voters are calling themselves independent? You would have thought the independents would have voted for her. Why were the people who didn't vote, which were more than the people who did, why didn't they look for someone who had true humanistic and repairable to the nation and the world and the environment and the human condition solutions? Jill Stein. 888-874-4888. Let's say hello to Kathleen from the Bronx. Hi, Kathleen. Your turn. You're on the air.
Hi, Gary. I am so glad that someone is bringing up the money aspect for all of this. Just this week, I received an email encouraging me to invest in this little tiny upstart company that is going to make billions on smart bullets at $25,000 a pop, and how we can equip all of our Navy ships with these at so many cannons and so many bullets per each. But wait, there's more. It was like a cheap knife commercial, because the Army wants these fabulous smart bullets too. And if we invest in this many tanks and this many guns and this many bullets, for your tiny investment, you can make billions. And they were adding it up. I was so horrified. I couldn't even watch the whole thing. And it was like this little infomercial with the cartoon graphics. And it was so disgusting, Gary. How can you have peace when the oligarchs are making billions of dollars on their investment? I wonder how much
you have two. You've raised two issues, Kathleen, both of which are important. When you can go directly to the public, I'm not familiar with this infomercial, but when you can go directly to the public to propose that they should be excited about money being made while other people have to die or suffer from the product that you are investing in, it tells us more about people who would engage in the investment because they've disengaged in understanding the spiritual and sacred value of human life. And that's for them to learn. Separately, never allow your own quality of life and clarity of thought to be muddled, to become turgid, based upon what others are doing. Like the Buddha says, detach from others so that you do not have the negative outcome and share that energy, and then share with others the positive right to affirm what we can do individually and collectively to make change. We can write articles. We can do documentaries. We can have public forums. We can debate. We can boycott. We have a lot of power at our disposal. If we only have more than 1% of the American population, use it. So I know that you will be one of those 1% making the right choices and sharing that information with others. Thank you, Kathleen. But according to Common Dreams, a new report released this week shows how U.S.-based multinational corporations are allowed to play by by a different set of rules than small and domestic businesses or individuals when it comes to paying taxes, to the tune of over $100 billion a year. The analysis from the U.S. PIRG Educational Fund and Citizens for Tax Justice showed that more than 73% of the Fortune 500 companies maintains subsidiaries in offshore tax havens, including Apple, Citigroup, Nike, Pfizer, PepsiCo, Goldman Sachs. By doing so, the corporations are avoiding $717 billion in taxes to the United States. This is from one, quote, corporate tax dodging may be legal, but it's certainly not good for everyday taxpayers and responsible small businesses, end quote. Now, here's my thought on this. Wouldn't it make more sense if we were just aware that the rich, the powerful, the corporate interests, and individuals are always going to find ways to pay less taxes because they're encouraged to do so? And very rarely would a corporation pay all of the taxes that it should. But we're expected to pay all of our taxes. We can't afford to hire expensive tax lawyers. We can't open up offshore subsidiaries. We can't park our money in the Cayman Islands or the Jersey Islands. So it is not fair. I'm glad that this was brought up about Donald Trump. He played with the rules that he was given, and he exploited them. Now, a lot of other people do the same thing. In fact, most of your successful business people would do a carry-forward loss. So they have a big loss one year, they carry that loss forward, so they're able to deduct that loss from their profits in the upcoming years. What if we just eliminated all that? And what if we simply said, no company in the United States is allowed to go outside the United States, make its profits, and then bring that back into the United States without paying taxes? We could stop this, but the people in power don't want to. Too many lobbyists have spent too much money to too many legislators and heads of committees to make sure that that kind of law that would benefit us all would be enacted. After all, if we put a simple 1% tax on every Wall Street transaction, every algorithm transaction, that would bring us in over $100 billion a year. Then we wrap up those offshore accounts and save that from going outside, and that gives us over $700 billion. Well, gee whiz, we're almost at $1 trillion a year with something that simply done. There's nothing-